Comic Book Legion podcast. Happy Father's Day to all you nerds out there. I am Mark, and with me, we got, well, he's not a dad, but he's, I don't know. Are you expecting? Are you like Aquaman?
Whoa, hey, spoilers. No, I am not expecting, not anytime soon. But I am somebody who was a caregiver because my grandparents owned a daycare at one point. So I've taken care of plenty of kids. My wife is a nanny that we love the family that she takes care of, and I take care of them from time to time. So in a weird way, I have been like a surrogate father to a kid that I've known since birth, since his birth.
Right. You're just an all-around good guy. I mean, you hate Bendis, but besides that, you're an all-around good guy.
Well, I have some words about some other people today, so it's not just Bendis, but we'll get to it.
Man, you know what? I'm starting to regret. Before I was telling Clay, I'm like, dude, speak your mind, man. Stop being so like passive. And now this guy's speaking his mind a little bit too much. Now we're I'm joking.
You know,
hate all you want, brother.
But I will say this, the book that we're going to talk about later today that I have some words about, I reread the book, and it's not the fact that I, like, despise or hate the writer. I just think that his format wasn't really good for the book that he was writing. So, but we'll get to it. We'll get to it.
We'll get to it. That's a tease so that we can make sure that you stay on with us for, like, over 3 hours. No, I'm joking. We are going to start with, well, I wanted to talk a little bit about Father's Day. So, Clay, how was your, well, you're not a dad, but, you know, spending time, like, how was your Father's Day family weekend?
So, unfortunately, I had to work on Father's Day, but I...
Call out your job right now. Call them out and tell them.
I know.
That this is baloney.
I know. They, like, on, like, national holidays and things like that. It's a 24-hour job. Like, it's open 24 hours. So there's three shifts, one from 6 a.m. to 3, one from 3 to 11, and then 11 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Good Lord.
Yeah. So, well, technically 7. I think it's 11 to 7 because it's 8 hours. Yeah. So, it constantly needs workers to be there. So all the national holidays, the higher up people who like have an office, they get to have off on holidays, but we still have to go in and do some stuff. So, but the only cool thing is that I am working both on Thanksgiving this year and on Black Friday. And for some reason, they're considering Black Friday a holiday. So I get like double the pay on both of the like both of those days. So I'm like, okay, cool, I'll do that, no problem. But
I mean, if you have no plans on buying stuff, then sweet.
As I grew up, you know, I thought Black Friday was like, okay, these are the days that I need to go buy something because it's going to be super cheap. I found out that Cyber Monday is the best place to buy anything. Because it's like three times cheaper.
Normally, that happens a lot. I always think that the best time to go shopping is after those crazy holidays. Because something that my wife and I, we've realized, is that when we know Black Friday is coming, we like to go to stores that we're thinking of going and seeing what things cost.
Mm-hmm.
So then when it's Black Friday, we want to go back to that same item to see, did they mark up the price? So then when they say 50% off, it actually shows that you're really only saving like $3, $4.
Yeah.
Instead of it being like a $20, $30 saving or,
yeah,
you know, in this case, like, you know, certain like TVs or stuff like that. And I've noticed that a lot of retail stores, that's pretty crappy of them. So what I do and my wife do is once the crazy holiday thing or, you know, like big shopping sprees are over, usually the week after, since all the Americans have spent all their money, there's usually like really great sales. And that's when we go shopping. So that's kind of like what we do. But in terms of Father's Day, I had a really good Father's Day. We, you know, my dad, luckily he was off because right now in the minor leagues is kind of like the All-Star game. So he's kind of like taking a break from that. So he came to visit us, so it was nice to see him. Barbecue, you know, swimming pool, all that kind of stuff. But I got a lot of gift cards. And the great thing about Father's Day and gift cards is you get to buy comics if you're someone like myself. So because you know that I'm hurting because I don't have a comic book wall, I'm already thinking about what's the new way that I want my wall to look in the new house. So one thing that I want to do is I want to have nothing but great collections. Now, I'm kind of getting to that point where I'm only getting the single floppies of like events or certain books that I want. I'm not buying as much as I used to, because what I'm doing now is I wait until I get like a sweet collection. And when there comes like this huge kind of like what I showed you with Watchmen, which I just posted on my Twitter at Mark Reads Comics, it's like these kind of things. I'm looking forward to that, where I can kind of have my dream is, you know, like in Beauty of the Beast, you know how Belle has like that off, like her own little personal. No, wait, does she have that, or she works there, like in that library? I haven't seen Beauty and the Beast in a long time. But do you know what I'm talking?
The way it works is that the Beast tells her in the castle, oh, this library is all yours.
No, like before she meets wasn't she like a book nerd?
Oh,
a
bookworm? Yeah. There was a local library that she.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's been a while since I read it. I was gonna mention like Downton Abbey, because that's kind of like fresh on my mind, because I've been watching that with my wife and that show's awesome. But anyways, I want one of those old school, like 1900, like book, like libraries, personal libraries. But I have books, but I want it to also be like in just really cool comic book collections. So that's why I finished buying this. I didn't even know, but I mentioned it to you. You didn't know it either, that Watchmen has like this now, like a DC Black Label, which is hardcover. It comes with like a hard case, like a sleeve. I got, what else did I buy? I got Paper Girls. I love indie comics. Believe it or not, Fred and Rico, I do like indie comics. So yeah, I got Paper Girls 1 and 2. I got the Black Hammer. Dude, I thought it was an omnibus when I bought it. And then when I looked in the back, just because of how big it is, it says like library edition.
Yeah, I saw that too when I was looking.
I'm like, wait, did I buy like a library book at Barnes & Noble? But no, I guess that's just what they called it. Uh-huh. Because of, I don't get it. But whatever, it's a hardcover, it's freaking gorgeous, and because it's big, it kind of looks like an absolute edition. I got, because I followed the advice of Kevin, I've always been interested in Fables. Have you heard of Fables?
I've always heard of it. I've always seen it when I used to work at the comic shop. I never picked it up. I don't know.
I heard like Fables is kind of like a version of that TV show. What was it called? Once Upon a Time?
Is it
something like that with like Grimm?
I was going to say
fairy tale stuff.
Is it Once Upon a Time or is it Grimm? Because those were
okay. It's more Grimm. I forgot about that show Grimm.
Because Grimm was with the detective, and I think that's more of what the book is about. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Because there's also a, well, I don't know if it's there anymore because the company went bankrupt and, you know, got, you know, stopped making video games. But there was a Telltale game that was called Wolf Among Us or something like that. And it was
Wolf Among Us.
And it was based off of Fables.
Ah, nice. Okay, so then because I followed him and it's something that I've always been interested, you know what? I got volumes 1 and 2. Man, what else did I get? I mentioned Paper Girls. Before that, I got the V for Vendetta, the 30th anniversary hardcover. And because, well, I mentioned this like on Nation of Nerds, I had like issues 1 through like 140 of The Walking Dead.
Uh-huh.
But because of money issues and, you know, wife being pregnant and, you know, stuff like that, I had to sell my collection. And it killed me, although it paid a lot of bills. But I've never been able to, because now, because of the popularity of the show, even though the show's kind of dying down, the books are really expensive.
It's still a very expensive book. It's still a very popular book to just grab. Yeah.
Exactly.
So did you get
a
compendium?
Well, I would have. The problem is that I even with my like novels, I don't like paperback.
Okay.
I'm an anti-paperback guy because the more that you read it, you just get that crimble spine. And when I'm looking at it, I don't want to see it. I promise you, even if I see it, everything else is mint condition. I will throw that book away. Well, I wouldn't throw it away. I'll do like I'll go to Goodwill or something.
Yeah.
but like I'll get rid of it. That's what I meant to say. So I found that they had these, which is like Walking Dead, and it's called Book One.
Huh.
So this covers issues 1 through 12.
Oh, that's not bad.
Now, here in Barnes & Noble, just because I had the gift card, I got it, but it's $34.99. But this book, Amazon right now has some crazy sales that they're like 60% off, where you can actually get Book One hardcover, and it's $14.
Nice.
Yeah, so I told my wife this has nothing to do with gift cards, but I spent like $70 and I went through and I got books like 2 through 5. So I have like the first like 60 issues. So I'm like, hey, spending $70 to get 60 issues worth of Walking Dead, I've read them all already. I don't care because I would read them again.
That's not bad though.
But yes. No, it's, I thought, I was like, man, this is great. But anyways, talking about fathers, let's go into comics because this was a week for comics fathers.
Yes. And speaking of fathers, speaking of hardened, experienced fathers, we're going to go with Batman 73 first.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. First thing I want to say reading Batman is I kind of feel bad because we were having a discussion on our Comic Book Legion Slack page, which is with all our writers, our contributors, talking about that. Huge shout out to Kelly OneShot, Tom Zim, and Pierre for joining the Comic Book Legion fam. So welcome. Thank you guys for giving us a shot of wanting to be a part of the Comic Book Legion team. And, you know, Clay and I will do everything, you know, in our power to make sure that this is a super fun. I think everybody that we have on our team is having an absolute blast. And, you know, we got some things in the works, some future projects. I think we're going to take Comic Book Legion to the next level with like a first take battle.
Yeah.
Now, are we going to have Bendis buddies? I'm not sure. I'm not sure, but if we do have Bendis buddies, that will be probably the greatest podcast that you will ever listen to.
Oh my gosh.
But we were actually having a discussion with Batman. What are your favorite Batman artists? And I know a lot of people mentioned Mikal Janin, and I'm like, dude, the guy's great. But I'm like, there are so many classic like guys that I kind of didn't want to go like a recency bias. Because, you know, sometimes you fall prisoner of what's happening presently.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I don't want that to be the case. So then I read Batman 73, and I'm like, damn it, this guy is so good.
It's gonna be a bummer once. I feel like Janine might, you know, probably hold a place in Catwoman Batman, or Batman Catwoman. He might have a place there, he might not, but I'm pretty sure Janine is leaving with Tom King when it comes to Batman in 2020. It's going to be a sad moment to realize, especially with the ominous, like, just art that you see here. One of my favorite panels is...
And kudos to Jordi Belair, because her colors are top-notch.
Yes. I think one of my favorite panels is within the first... It's the second page, actually. Well, no, technically the first page. That last panel on the first page.
With Thomas on the horse?
With Thomas on the horse. The shading, yeah. It's very dark. And shout out to, again, one of our contributors, Juice Wayne. He actually listened to this song on YouTube while he was reading, and he said that it was crazy, but then also he listened to a playlist with this song on it, and like he made a comment about all those old folk songs. They mm-hmm. are very predatory, apparently. but this one, I did not get the chance to listen to the song while I was reading this. The only thing I could picture was Jeffrey Dean Morgan from freaking Walking Dead and played Thomas Wayne.
He's the comedian.
Yeah, the comedian in Watchmen. I can just imagine his voice singing this song.
Well, considering like when you hear him on the show Walking Dead as Negan and you're hearing like the whistling,
yes,
I can kind of see him on the... I can see him doing the whistling and...
I'm pretty sure there was an episode of Walking Dead where he like sang a lullaby or did something. And so just... to imagine his voice singing.
Well, he did the eeny, meeny, miny, mo before bashing Glenn's head and Abraham's head.
Yeah, there's that too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, that's not a song, but...
Yeah.
But, I mean, so, reading this issue, first, it went by really fast, but if you're just paying attention, this is one of those stories to me that I feel like the art is supposed to tell the story, which is what I like about it. I like when art can be like the driving force of a comic.
Uh-huh.
Because in a way, it kind of felt until the last, like the very end, it kind of felt like a silent issue. Just because, you know, reading the little lyrics of the song, that kind of stuff, you get very little dialogue, you know, maybe the couple of times when you're hearing him sing or when Thomas meets the Death in the Desert, which are these ninjas who it looks like they keep on trying to kill Bruce. Well, maybe both of them, but the way it kind of seemed, which is, it's actually funny because when we were talking on the chat, you mentioned that Juice kind of found like a parallel with the Swamp Thing issue.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and it was funny because I thought you guys were talking about the Winter Special. And in the Winter Special, it was kind of like, this is like the desert, but with Swamp Thing, it was like the Swamp Thing with the little boy who he was like, you might be my son, I don't know, I feel like I might have to kill you, like I don't understand what's going on, but in the moments of like the protection, you're kind of just getting it, this is in the winter, but you see the moments where every time they go to sleep, you know, Swamp Thing wakes up and he has to protect the little boy either from a bear or, you know, something like some kind of predator. So I actually thought those were the parallels that you were talking about. I was like, man, it kind of goes hand in hand. And then you're like, no, I'm talking about the other issue. I'm like, oh, snap, I feel like an idiot. But at least I was, at least to me, I kind of felt like, all right, well, at least maybe I caught something else.
Yeah, no, the parallel that he caught, which I thought was really cool, I don't have the issue with me now. But I do.
Okay.
So
in the regard, in the, when you're looking for the text, I wanted to give one shout out to someone that I've been chatting with on Twitter, and it's, Bix at Bix3117. And he was kind of talking about how he really enjoyed our Walking Dead reviews on the Nation of Nerd podcast. And I mentioned that, you know, stuff are in the works in regards to doing some indie work and the indie shows. And I let him know that I got him. I just wanted to give him a shout out. Yes, I am with you, Bix. I love the Walking Dead comics, and I can't wait to, you know, have that chance to go ahead and talk about them again. So you got the text?
Yeah, I do. So
okay.
So he texted me and said, "It's interesting because I literally randomly read this yesterday." So we got the books sometime this weekend, and he had just picked up because he was doing research on, I think Mitch, and he was looking up some of that stuff.
Okay.
And it says here, Batman is talking to Swamp Thing, and he says, "No, no, this isn't over. No, you have to explain it to me again. You have to tell me my mother and father are falling back into life." Because when he had a prior conversation with Swamp Thing, Swamp Thing said, "Dead is not dead. Dead is falling back into life." And the really cool thing about that statement is that this entire arc is called The Fall and the Fallen.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the cliffhanger of this book, it's the fact...
It's a really... How do you feel about that cliffhanger? I mean, I don't know if we're going to mention it.
We can.
Okay.
And I'll go ahead and mention it now. The cliffhanger is, throughout the entire book, you see Thomas Wayne dragging Bruce and a coffin throughout the desert. And then you find out that he is fighting, every single time he wakes up, he is fighting some of Ra's al Ghul's army, assassins. And
But is the death in the desert, were those part of Ra's al Ghul?
I'm pretty sure Bruce says
I was trying to figure out, like, with the first one, like, Death in the Desert, I don't remember that ever being a callback, so I didn't know if maybe they were just speaking about themselves, like, kind of like in a parable, and maybe they are, you know, just League of Assassins, but I wasn't sure if that was indeed a Ra's thing, or if this was just kind of like a new group, but
it might be a new group because I haven't heard of them before. But he says here, the Death of the Desert, Ra's al Ghul's personal guard. So,
okay.
So Bruce eventually wakes up like right after Thomas fights another wave of them, and they're having a conversation, and he eventually asks like, "What's in the coffin?" And Thomas says, "It's your mother." And he says, "You and I, we've come a long way, son. We've bled and we've burned. We've earned some rest, a right to go home. But when we do, we're going to do so as a family." And so they're kind of having a discussion about it. And then all of a sudden, which is weird because there's a point where Batman or Bruce puts on the cowl and they're singing. But I don't know if it's Thomas again. I'm pretty sure it might be.
I think it's him just because you see the musical notes. It's black and red.
Yeah, okay. Okay, yeah, that's what I assumed. But
I mean, it would be really weird if Bruce started to sing.
Yeah. But the thought of Thomas trying to find a Lazarus pit, to bring back Martha, I have some issues with, because here's the thing.
Well, that was gonna be the question, because you're seeing the possibility of Ma and Pa. Now there is, even though yes, this isn't the Thomas Wayne, but now you're looking at this possibility. We'll be reading another book. We'll be discussing another book, and the way that it ends is bringing back someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of seems that we're getting a lot of. This is literally, if this is because of Father's Day, like if they did this purposely, like kudos to DC. Like this is really clever the way that they handled this. But if not, I'm just like, wow, there's a lot of changes going on, where these are like earth-shattering kind of changes for these certain characters. And I want to know what you thought of it.
Well, here's the thing, because I have a good thought and I have a bad thought. Good thought is that, you know, Thomas, you know, successfully does this and Bruce has his parents back. The only bad thing about that is his motivation is literally just done for, which I don't think would completely compel Batman to not be Batman anymore, just because he's been Batman for so long. He feels the urge to protect his city. So I don't think that'll ever happen to Bruce. But some things that people may not remember when it comes to the Lazarus Pit is whenever somebody's resurrected, they come out evil. They come out psychotic.
But now what they're showing here, though, this is like the Nain pit. So this isn't the Lazarus pit. Like, it makes me wonder, is this something new? Like, is this a new type of pit that is something even more powerful than the Lazarus pit?
See, I didn't catch that. I just thought of a Lazarus pit. I thought it was more of when they said that, like, probably like one of the last or whatever. Because I'm pretty sure it's still continuity that, didn't they destroy most of the Lazarus pits, in the Trinity book a while ago, like within the first year of.
Yeah. They have. So that's why I'm kind of wondering, does this pit, because I believe it's, let me see what panel that's on. It's actually right before when he goes the coffin, it's mother. It's two panels to the left. And it says the pit, the Nain pit, it's in Kadim. And he's like, I've heard rumors, but I didn't think. And he's like, only reason Ra's al Ghul would use the death. So what I'm trying to figure out here is with him mentioning the Nain pit, I'm like, wow, this has to be something that it has like some kind of restorative property or something that the Lazarus pit does not. So it kind of gives a little bit more of a mystery of why Thomas would be using that one, because again, we don't know truly what his motives are.
Uh-huh.
We know some, but I'm really curious to see what King's going to do in the future representing this, because it's an unknown.
Well, one thing, because when me and Juice Wayne were talking about this, and I thought of, you know, just because of the way I read it, I just thought of the Lazarus Pit, thought about her coming back you know, not so complete or so sane, I had the awful thought of DC attempting to bring the female Martha Joker into continuity.
Mm.
And I would not like that.
Well, because it's in continuity. But did you like that Flashpoint series?
I thought that it was a very interesting take. I don't think I've ever read anything more than just the Flashpoint story. I don't think I went from what I can remember, I never went back to read the Flashpoint Batman story. Cuz they
had, oh man, it's only like 3 issues.
Really?
I would definitely check it out, because it was, I mean, again, I would not want that in continuity, because I think that that's only going to damage Batman more.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, whenever you get a chance, since it's only 3 issues, I believe, yeah, definitely check it out. So yeah, man, Batman 73, really, really, really good. I'm really curious to see what's going to happen. I mean, Tom King keeps on teasing, you know, 74 is big, but 75 is even bigger. So we're 2 issues away from that. And considering, you know, 75, that's a big milestone. So for any writer being on a book for that long, so I can't wait to see what's going to happen there. But in terms of going from the hardened father to a frightened father, we go into Aquaman 49 by Kelly Sue DeConnick, Vic Bogdanovich, which I just call him like Capullo 2.0, Jonathan Glapion, Ryan Wynn, and Sonny Go, I believe. I don't want to...
Yeah.
Sonny Go. First thing I want to say, the B cover by Joshua Middleton. Good Lord, it's freaking gorgeous. That dude's amazing. But what did you think? I mean...
I enjoyed this very, very much. That second page with Mother Shark... The way
the coolest, the freaking coolest, the oh my god, the inks in that,
the way they,
the coolest panel,
the way, and you posted, I think, a black and white sketch of it.
Yeah.
Oh
yeah.
My gosh, without all of the panels and the bubbles and everything, this art is amazing. I absolutely love the art. You know, you made a joke about Capullo 2.0. Which is funny because his main inker is also on this book, Jonathan Glapion. That's that third page with Mira with her fist up in the air. Mm-hmm. Like, we talk about it all the time, how we're like, oh, I want that page. I want that page. This is another page that I want. This is something that I would love to see the sketch, you know, just the inks on. I thought it was awesome. The meat of the book got me a little confused.
The way that it skipped, because I think like the overarching theme and what Kelly was trying to say and do, I think is really strong.
Yes.
And I think that the future of this book is going to be stronger. But I am 100% with you, where I had to do some double takes to kind of figure out, I'm like, wait, where are we in the story? Yeah. Did I lose digitally a page?
Because for me, when I was reading this entire dialogue between Arthur and Mira, I quickly realized, oh snap, I have not been reading Aquaman that long. So a lot of these references I did not get. I know that very blatantly, the way they did the lettering and things, there's a moment where they talk about the Suicide Squad and the arc right before Drowned Earth. Where for a short amount of time Atlantis was above water.
Yes, and Amanda Waller was trying to sink it back down.
Yeah. They did some references to that. They talked about how he almost died with the Legion of Doom. And so
I actually like that they kind of referenced like Drowned Earth, like kind of gave a little bit of a...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, well, technically he died in Drowned Earth, so I think this is before Drowned Earth.
Yes, I think this is one of those things, like, it must have happened...
In between.
Which kind of makes me feel like I'm really curious to... I want to go back to Drowned Earth now, because when Aquaman was making the sacrifice...
Yes, he was... The way he was talking to both Wonder Woman before it actually started.
Mm-hmm.
And just his overall attitude throughout that series, I feel like something was a little off. And yeah. I wonder if this was always part of the plan.
Okay.
If it was, that's very cool timing and planning, because Drowned Earth was actually a few months ago. Like,
yeah, yeah, it was. I mean, Aquaman comes out once a month, and this is part five of Kelly's story.
Yeah.
So we're talking 5 months. So 5-6 months.
Yeah. That's when Drowned Earth ended. Yes. So
the planning was even before that.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. Very cool on DC's part. The one thing, the big reveal, like we said about Scared Fathers, is that Mira is pregnant. This, if anybody is a fan of Aquaman or has read anything that was pre-New 52, this is nothing to be surprised about. Because I just recently read something. I think it was Blackest Night. I read Blackest Night for Fanboy Comics Podcast, okay. Which was pre-New 52, and mm-hmm. they referenced Aquaman's son. So mm-hmm. we can assume that it's going to be a boy that she's going to have, and they are finally bringing him back in continuity. You know, one thing that was a little weird was Aquaman's attitude in here.
Oh, he was very kind of like chill boy surfer dude.
He was
like,
very Jason Momoa. Was a joke. That's
yes, very, very, very Momoa.
Yeah,
which was kind of like when I was reading it, I didn't like it, especially because of the stuff that was happening with Aquaman. Because if this happened before that, I mean, we're literally talking about an Aquaman during the whole Crown of Thorns moment.
Mm-hmm.
During Crown of Thorns, I mean, he kind of gave up the rights of wanting to be king, and he accepted it, like, he no longer wanted to be it, so he was very down on his... So it's kind of like, if this is one of those interactions after, like, hey, thanks, Dolphin, thanks for everything, see you later, you know, all that kind of stuff, and now I'm here... I didn't like it because it's not... I've never seen Aquaman act like that.
Yeah.
So I think that she was trying to point that picture of maybe how in real life, maybe husbands and wives, when they're having conversations, because my wife always wants to have a serious conversation, and I'm kind of like... She calls me for... I mean, again, we're in our 30s, so we like the TV show Friends. She calls me Chandler because I'm always sarcastic. I'm sarcastic, witty. I don't take a lot of things too serious. So I think that this was supposed to be kind of like that stereotypical conversation that a wife's trying to be serious, the husband's just joking around, not taking things serious. And it looks like from here, Aquaman just wanted to have a little with Mera. It looks like that's kind of what was going on until she says, I'm pregnant. Now this guy no longer is taking things as a joke, and now the world just smacked them in the face. And it looks like that's what happened with Arthur, because when Arthur heard those words, the first thing he thought of was when he was a child and his mother abandoned him because of duty.
Yeah.
And I thought that, I'm like, whoa, that's... See, these are the things that I like. I like that these moments that they go back and, you know, it's not everything is happy joy. Not everything is hope and optimism. This is like life. This is real life. And I like this because this is something that, you know, has always been behind him. And even people think they hated when, in like Heroes in Crisis, when Arthur only said, mother, my mother.
Yeah.
Like, this was just because things can be all forgiven, or maybe it wasn't forgiven. I mean, this was still a really big chapter in his life. And I thought Kelly, from this moment on, played it to perfection.
Yeah. The way they pulled it off here, I really, really liked. But the only confusing part was the very ending. So, the ending... I should reiterate. The ending of Mira's conversation with Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
She got very frustrated with him. And she attacked him. Whether it be intentional or not, she attacked him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, blew off half of his armor. And this whole story was about Mira being his killer. And mm-hmm. and so I'm like, is that supposed to be metaphorical? Or did we just see the death of Aquaman here? I'm very confused. Just because we all know that he lived to go through Drowned Earth to die. So it's not...
I mean, I feel like that last issue was just for, like, shock. I was just saying, what do you mean Mera's a killer? I think that they just meant it as that... Because the beginning of this issue talked about a little bit of how Arthur and Mera met. And she was meant to kill him.
Yeah.
So I think that that's kind of like one of those shocking things just to get the person to come back.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we all kind of know what the story is. But maybe a lot of new readers, because maybe people who are interested in the Aquaman-Mera relationship are going to be a little confused with how the movie did it.
Yeah.
And I think it's okay the way they did with the movie. And, you know, even though, like, if you're a hardcore Aquaman fan and you're like, oh, Mera, Nereus, this is her father. There's a lot of changes, but, you know, it can work for a movie purposes.
Yeah, for sure.
Here, I'm thinking that maybe they just did something like that to kind of, you know, create conversation. Because you got to have a little bit of shock or for people to talk about the end. And I think that's what it was meant for.
Yeah.
But again, this is one of those things that, with what you're saying, it is weird. Because I would have really have liked to know when before Drowned Earth or something like that was a conversation like this. Because it looks like Arthur took a, you know, a big blow. And I would have liked to see what would have happened with Arthur and Mera's relationship between then.
Yeah.
So, you know, but then it looks like, you know, Mother Shark leaves him to go. And it looks like that now he knows his purpose. He knows who he is. He knows that he needs to go home. And I loved it. I don't know why. I love that page of him coming out of the water. And he's like, my name is Arthur Curry.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I liked it. It was one of those.
Very cool art.
Yeah. And it ends with Mera, you know, she's there and she kind of collapsed on the beach side. But again, the way that you see her kind of like picking herself up and then she kind of collapses, it kind of looked like if she just did that to Arthur. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, where was Mera at this moment? Like, it doesn't... Things are not making sense. Or it could just be that Mother Shark is really messing with him. But this kind of seems like it's, you know, real.
Yeah.
This moment with Mera. So it's a little confusing. But I don't know why. I kind of just bought into everything.
Yeah.
Knowing that there are faults, I still bought into it.
Yeah. Very.
So I'm really pumped. And I'm curious to see what Aquaman 50 is going to do.
I never really thought about how that ending, it does look like it literally just happened.
Mm-hmm.
But it could very well be in the past. But the only thing that's different is the whole Black Manta Returns thing. So I'm just like, is this supposed to be a tease? Like, are they saying that Black Manta attacked her? Or, you know, something like that. So.
No, man. Black Manta's the dead. No, I'm joking.
Aquaman.
That would be really awkward.
That would be so awkward.
And then another crazy thing is, like, because I'm trying to think, wasn't the motherhood, like, trying to say that she has to marry someone else?
Yeah, they were...
in the previous... Yeah. So it kind of makes me wonder, I'm like, dude, can you imagine, because the timeline in this issue is a little funky, like, is it Arthur's kid? Because it looks like she wasn't able to say all her feelings, because it was a really, uncomfortable conversation.
Yeah.
So even that is something where it's, I'm like, oof, man, this issue had a lot.
Yeah.
It had a lot.
Now, speaking of an issue that had a lot, though, I'm going to take us into Justice League. And I could sit here and explain every little thing, but we'll be here for another 2 hours. But so this... Like I said, has a lot. It has a story. It has a kind of backstory of Martian Manhunter still searching for Lex Luthor, while also listening to rumors of a hooded person, or a hooded man. I think that's what they call him in this issue. We also get the rest of the Justice League going into the. What is it called? The House of Heroes, which is the meeting place of the multiverse of heroes. which I thought was really, really cool, just because we saw some faces we haven't seen in a long time. And we also get some story with Mira and Hawk Girl. Hawk Girl is basically the one that is in charge of getting the Justice League of Earth ready to go with this whole Year of the Villain, Legion of Doom attack that is inevitable. We see that Hawk Girl is very irritable. Mira is trying to just talk her through everything. And one of the main reasons is that she's very frustrated with Martian Manhunter because they think looking for Lex Luthor is kind of a lost cause as of right now. And they should be all centered around, you know, preparing. And Martian Manhunter is very fixated on finding the truth. We see that Superman confronts everybody and says at the Hall of Heroes that the source wall broke simultaneously throughout the multiverse when it got destroyed in the main continuity universe. I think that's a very cool aspect. I know we're getting a lot of one-shots for Year of the Villain. I wouldn't mind getting a one-shot for the, kind of looking back to see how the multiverse got affected by the source wall.
Oh, no, we need, an awesome one-shot of just, House of Heroes or something, and just go Earth by Earth, kind of like multiversity, and just go down in order. Maybe not all of the Earths, but kind of like the ones that are a little bit more recognizable.
Yeah, like I said, with something that we haven't seen in a while, if you look at the panel where it says, Superman says, "Thank you all for coming," and it's just like a big page with all the heroes, right above Superman's head, right above the bubble for his words, you see Earth 2 Justice League, which a lot of people...
Oh, yeah. When I saw Val Zod and, the Flash, and I was like, yes. I love that.
Yeah.
That was actually, the first thing that I saw. I was like, dude, that's Val Zod!
So, there's them. There is... I can't remember the Earth where Etrigan was actually a Superman in here also. Very recognizable people if, you're somebody who just likes to do research on the DC Universe. I always see those pictures on Pinterest because my wife made me make a Pinterest one day.
Wait, isn't that Earth 13?
I think so.
I think Etrigan's 13. I don't know if that's the Superman version, though. I'm not sure, but I think Etrigan is 13.
Okay. Well, he has the S on his chest. So I was...
Yeah.
So there's these really cool pictures that I've seen throughout the years of, it says Earth whatever, and it shows the Justice League of that Earth, and it gives you, a small description of what is important about that Earth. Really cool if you want to just learn some random stuff. Also here, I think this is confirmation. Jordan and Chris are listening at all, a while back they had a conversation about where Batman Beyond was held in continuity. We see a panel here with Batman Beyond and an older Superman. So my assumption is that they're from a different Earth. I always thought that because Rebirth dealt with Tim Drake and Batman Beyond, I always thought that it was just the future of our Earth. Apparently not. So it looks like Batman Beyond is a part of another Earth, part of the multiverse. But going back to some of the bigger points in the book, we see that, oh my gosh, what's his name? Starman collapses again. He is trying to find the rest of his power, because it is tied to the original totality. But the totality was scattered across time and space. He faints. He's not in full capacity whenever it comes to power. And this kind of reveals to Hawkgirl and Mira that, Hot Girl is really just trying to put too much on herself.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that Hot Girl likes to say is, you know, I've literally fought in every war known to man because of her reincarnating. And she thinks that this next one coming up is probably the biggest of them all. And so some really heart-to-hearts with Mira and Hot Girl here. But we finally see in Martian Manhunter's story that he finally sees that there's a possibility of finding out where Lex Luthor is. He goes to this abandoned house, and he feels a presence in that house. And none other than Lionel Luthor, on the very last page of this book, is coming in to punch Martian Manhunter. This is a surprise to me only because of the story we heard, or that we got, back when we were learning about Martian Manhunter's past. Mm-hmm. But also, with that, we were learning that Vandal Savage and Lionel Luthor were working together at one point. And at one point, they got rid of Lionel Luthor's memory.
Mm-hmm.
So, and here, I'm pretty sure he calls him by name. Lionel Luthor calls Martian Manhunter by name, John Jones. So,
yeah, he's like, you want answer, John Jones of Mars.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
I'm wanting to know, like, where did he come from? How does he know John now? Like, did something they do give him all of his memories back? Like, this is a very interesting thing to set up. I enjoyed this issue a lot. I love the banter between Green Lantern and Flash in this book.
In Flash, yes.
With Captain Carrot. Mm-hmm. Very, very cool seeing that callback again.
I like seeing that Barry, it showed that Barry's kind of like known. He's kind of like popular.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know, I've done this multiverse thing a couple of times. Like, I thought that that was a nice nod, because it would have felt strange, like, if he was there and he kind of was like a stranger.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I like that he kind of had like the, I was like, you know, I'm that cool guy on the block. You know, people know who I am. You know, I'm the Flash. Yeah. Like, I thought that was nice. I got to say that I was really, when I was seeing the World Forger and when he was talking about, and you see like the Kingdom Come Soups, which is, I think, Earth 22 or 23.
Yeah.
20, yeah. And he was kind of like, how, you know, like, how can we help you? And he's like, if the universe wants to survive, you know, like, I need my brothers. And for some reason, that, like, that page of seeing, you know, the monitor and anti-monitor, it kind of just felt like, the first thing I thought of was, damn, I really want to read Darkseid Wars again. Just because that book had, so, you know, like, such high stakes. And seeing Darkseid fight the anti-monitor, I mean, that's freaking awesome. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like, I saw this page, and I kind of got giddy for what's to come.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because it's kind of like, you know, you're seeing the Justice League, but now you're going to be seeing possibly the Justice League of, like, so many Earths. Also, you know, the big celestial beings of the DC Universe. I'm just kind of, I don't know. It got me a little excited, where I kind of feel that Snyder's going to end next year with, like, the next crisis, like the real, like a real crisis.
I definitely have that feeling.
Yeah, and I feel like it's only getting to that point. So it's,
I'm very excited about it.
I'm a little excited for that.
Yeah, same here. It's like, I can only assume that the final chapter of this Justice League will be that big battle with Perpetua. Mm-hmm. And I just think that they could very well make it into a crisis, and it's going to be, or if even that, if it's Perpetua, if it's not Perpetua, then it would be with the creators, which we have not seen yet, which I would be totally down to learning 100%. More about them. So overall, big issue. Really crazy that we got such a big issue when it came to, you know, right after, you know, issue 25, which was mm-hmm. But a lot of exposition. This book was written by Tynion.
James Tynion.
Yeah. And then the new artist, Fernandez.
Yeah, Javier Fernandez. Yeah. He did the inks and the colors. Or no, I'm sorry. He did the inks, the pencils and the inks, and then Hi-Fi did the colors. But it was, I gotta say, I was really, I kind of like that, man. I like that Justice League is doing like what a Justice League book should do, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're gonna have, in the meantime, those books that are meant for like just 100% like character development. And you get those like in those little one shots. But I love that this is painting a, if you're gonna have the Justice League, it needs to be a big story. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like, don't have it be where it's like, oh, these little, oh yeah, they're saying it's big, but after 5 issues, that story literally is done. Yeah. No, those 5-6 issues of that arc are only leading to something that's going to be even bigger.
That's I feel like that's the only thing that the Rebirth Justice League was super annoying about. It was like, oh, this thing is going to, you know, like, destroy the DC universe. Oh, we fixed it in 3 issues. Oh, but the very next issue, this thing is going to destroy the DC universe.
I am going to, because what Brian Hitch has done for Hawkman, I have forgiven him for the atrocity that was Justice League. I hated Justice League. And you know what? I don't know if people liked it. I don't know if this is a hot take. Christopher Priest did not do any better.
No, he did not.
So people, Christopher Priest this, Christopher, I'm like, dude, I'm sorry. Maybe Deathstroke is a great book on its own. But everything I've read with Deathstroke when during these tie-ins and the stuff that he's done, it hasn't impressed me. And his Justice League run was... So, even that, like, I'm not...
Yeah.
Justice League was... Hearing Scott Snyder say that he's going on Justice League, in a way, when I first got it, I was like, oh my god, Scott Snyder. But then, in my mind, because I think I was so traumatized, like, if I was in Heroes in Crisis, if I was in Sanctuary, I would have said Brian Hitch. That would have been my word bubble. Bendis. Yeah, oh, dear. But even with Snyder, I think I was so worried because I was like, man, you know what? I know Snyder's amazing, but I've only read Snyder in dealing with, like, one character, you know?
Yeah.
The world building of Batman. Because, dude, I liked Dark Knight's Metal. I liked Metal. But Metal was a little... It was
a lot.
Even though you should have known that Snyder was going to still carry on that story, like that story wasn't finishing at the end of Metal because that's not the way Snyder does things. But I don't know. You figured since they were treating it as an event, there would have been an ending, but it wasn't. But there was a lot, and not everything finished. And it was like it ended a little unsatisfying. So when I see this, I was like, man, I don't know, man. Can he do a whole team? But dude, he's done. He's done more and more, like, above and beyond what I thought that he was going to be able to do.
Yeah, it has been very phenomenal. I love that it's built up to this point, and this is just the beginning. Like, I love that. Snyder just has a really awesome place in my heart. Of course, ever since Justice League 25, I think that will be... Like, seriously, it'll probably be, and still is, like, one of the top 5 Superman moments in comics for me. Definitely.
Yeah.
But talking about Superman, it's time to get to our final book of the day. Superman Year One.
Okay. All right. Since I know that you have thoughts, I will say this. This was the last book that I was reading, and not because of I'm like, oh, I want to give him my full undivided attention. It was Frank Miller has been more miss than hit in his latter part of his career. Secondly, I do not, the way that you feel about Bendis, I don't want to use despise, but I'm just going to say the way that you feel is the way that I feel about John Romita Jr.
Which is totally understandable. Because let me just say, Romita's art, senior and junior, they're very much the same, just because I'm pretty sure senior trained junior. Their art is very, like, 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And Like, the round faces, I do not like. I don't like the round faces. But
it's the round faces and the over-exaggerated eyes. Like, no one has eyes that look like that.
Yeah. But
or maybe they do, but they're, like, under the influence of, like, Waka.
But the one thing for me is whenever I saw Ramita doing the B covers for Nightwing at one point, I was just like, no, wait, I was liking the B covers before. Why now? Like, mm-hmm. You could have chose anybody else.
Yeah. So the thing is that I saw the Superman cover, and the first thing I said was, like, that's the first thought that came to my mind when I saw the cover. But then what I realized was, I was like, you know what? The more I'm looking at it is, I'm like, dude, but I actually like the colors. Because you can tell that this is not his collaborating work with Klaus Janson.
Yes.
And that Klaus Janson has, like, a much different style in coloring. And he uses a lot of those, you know, like the lines, like the hash mark, like hashing and whatever. Yeah. Cross hashes. And I was like, So I was like, you know what? Let me see. Like, who's on this team? Because the colors looked, you know, familiar. And it's Danny Mickey. Danny Mickey did the inks, and then Alex Sinclair. These are guys that are, like, these are big, like, big time, in terms of, like, the quality and the type of artists that we are more accustomed with.
Yeah.
So then when I was reading the book, I was like, man, why does this not look as bad as everything else that I've seen of Romita? And that's why when I was on Twitter, I was saying, like, you know what? Huge shout outs to Danny Mickey and Sinclair and, like, the team, because I feel that they did great things and they improved what this, like, I don't think I would have been able to enjoy the book but I gotta say, like, I thoroughly enjoyed the book. I know that this is, like, a year one, which in a way is supposed to, I guess, be continuity. I'm not taking this as, like, a continuity thing at all. I think of this as, like, a really cool Ultimate Spider-Man vibe kind of book. It's just an alternative take. I think you mentioned, like, Earth One.
Yeah.
Like what Straczynski did.
Yeah, I saw it as what they're doing is an Elseworld year one. I feel like just because of the way it ended, that it will have similarities to Earth One. Just because at the end of the book, we do see that Clark has chosen to go into the military. But, you know, I will say this. This is my hot take of this book.
If you say hot, it's gotta be hot.
This book should have been a novel, not a comic.
Well, I mean, it's the Black Label, so it's going to be 3 issues. Well, so it's not...
No. But it should not have art to it.
Oh, because of the way the dialogue.
Yes.
That's what you meant.
Yes.
Okay.
So,
I gotcha.
Because for one thing for me, the one thing that I hate, whether it be in comics, in books, in movies, in any sorts of entertainment, or even in real life, just doing everyday things, the one thing that I hate is to be talked to like I don't know what I'm seeing.
That was actually a complaint that I had with the Aquaman movie.
That
I just felt like everything I was seeing, there's always, like, a voiceover trying to give me a huge, like, explanation of what's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and we discussed it in a Slack chat, none of us understood why the narration is here. Like, I understand what tone Miller is going for with the narration, but there is literally no voice to the narration because...
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to identify because I think if we had at least if I had a little bit of a clear understanding, because some you could tell it's Clark, some were guessing it's Jor-El, you just don't know, or there's just this omnipresent, you know, power that, like, being that is, like, this omnipotent being that's there somewhere that's kind of just, like, overviewing something.
Yeah.
Or it's, like, this meta version of just, like a dude speaking to us. And it's, you know, like, if you're going to watch Winnie the Pooh and there was always that little speaker at the beginning. Like, I had no idea what was happening. But although I was confused, because there's moments when I'm, like, confused. and confused that it pisses me off. And I'm like, which I guess it kind of like happened with you. And then there's kind of like confused, but it's so weird and quirky and interesting that I liked it. And I think it was, I was just pleasantly surprised because I was coming in to the book, not really excited to read it. But because Romita's art didn't look as bad, and I think it's because of the colors and stuff, I don't know why. I dug the book.
Yeah, like I said, for me, the last taste that Miller left in my mouth...
I never read Master's Race.
So neither did I.
Okay.
I read All-Star Batman and Robin.
Bro, that book didn't even finish, man.
That was the most beautifully awful written story I have ever... Or most beautiful, awful written comic I've ever read.
Okay.
Just because Jim Lee was on art, and then, like, Miller was on writing, and he, like, had this weird relationship with Black Canary and made Robin eat rats. Like, it was just, like, it was weird. This, one of the comments, the very first comment I made to you was the actual dialect, accent that he gave everyone in this book. I know they're from Kansas, and everybody who is not from the South is probably listening to me and is like, man, that guy has a heavy Southern accent. I can't tell because I'm from the South. I hated the way people talked in this book. I absolutely hated it.
I mean, it was a little odd, and I see that I think he went a little heavy-handed in like the Midwest. But again, I don't know if you watch like those, I know this guy is not really popular to talk about. I just can't think of anybody else right now, but like John Wayne, even though I know that's even further back than like the 70s. But if you watch like those Western films or, you know, stuff like that, I would like to see like Wizard of Oz and see how they spoke then or something, because that was Kansas at least. So yeah. I don't know how, like, because this could be like just deep country. I mean, these were like farmers. I'm in Charlotte, but I'm very close to South Carolina, and I could just drive 5 miles south from North Carolina. I'm in South Carolina, and the way people speak, I even have to like double take and ask them what were they just asking me, because the twang is just really strong in them. So I'm trying to see, so maybe he just went to the extreme where he just made them, or maybe that was just normal in the 70s, and maybe now it kind of seems like a foreign concept.
Yeah.
But yes, I do go with you that it's not, maybe it's more a little bit stereotypical of what, you know, just what like farm boy countrymen would, country folk will talk.
Yeah.
Like all you needed to hear Jonathan would say like down yonder, just to like, you know, really throw it in there.
I know. And like just some of the stuff that like, I think there was one point where, like near the end of the book, let's see if I can find it. At one point, Martha and John are like talking, like on the stairs to ask where he is or something. And Jonathan just says, like, just that one word bubble. And I'm just like, I wanted to close the book. But like I said, just some of the dialogue, there was at one point when they were talking, when Martha and John were talking to the bus driver, he's like, we're on a military schedule. Like, I'm sorry, I'm part of a military family. Like, nobody talks like that in the military. They are hardened, but just like, oh, it's military time, military schedule, military food, military this, military that. And it's just like, that's not how things go. And so I was just, that bothered me a little bit. One thing that I thought was hilarious was Lana holding up the sign that says, I love you and I miss you. I want to know how long she's been there. Like, I was just like, I'm going to write this note and hopefully he looks at me or it looks in this direction. And I'm just going to stand here. And like, at what point did she feel like, oh, this is sufficient enough, he's probably seen it? Or is she crazy enough to be like, I'm going to stand here all night just in case?
Dude, I can't say anything because the Clark stuff in school, I loved all of it. These were kind of like, I think like when you talk, like on our chat, when you were mentioning in regards to like Jonathan kind of like aging, and that's not something that you were really fond of, and you, because you kind of wanted to see a lot of growth.
Mm-hmm.
These were kind of like the little things that I kind of would love to see with Jonathan. And I don't know why, but seeing like the schoolboy, you know, kind of like the mystery Clark and him learning the powers and everything that he can kind of go up against, seeing like the bullies and going up and seeing his friends getting hurt and he wants to do something. I don't know why, but I bought the relationship with him and Lana like this.
Oh, yeah.
Like I believed it. I believed it. There was even that little bit of an uncomfortable, and, you know, with it being Frank Miller and Black Label, I did. I'm actually curious what that moment when there was actually looking like there could have been a possible gang rape.
Yeah.
On Lana. I was curious if it wasn't for Bat Peepee, what would have, like, what this book would have maybe have done.
I am hesitant to think that DC would let Miller do that just because of.
Well, full nude.
Yeah, for sure.
Anything,
for sure.
But
because of his prior books, like The Dark Knight. Mm-hmm. And things like that. I think that DC knows Miller enough to be like, hey, we have to set limits on this guy. So I feel like they right off the bat said, hey, you can't do this. You can't do this.
Like I wasn't expecting to see, but I wonder because when I was reading it, I felt like, man, this is a pretty intense moment.
And it was.
And it's also because I really was buying. I bought Lana as a character. Like, I was like, wow, this version of Lana's, I like this version. And when, I don't know why, I kind of felt like when that moment was going to happen, I was like, oh my gosh. Like, I was scared to turn the page.
I enjoyed this as much as I enjoyed Peter and Gwen. I very much felt it. Mm-hmm. My hot take for those characters is Gwen is Peter's first love and always will be. That is my take on that. But
well, because some of my favorite stories of Spider-Man had to do with Ultimate Spider-Man, and when I was getting into comics, Ultimate Spider-Man was kind of like the first stuff I read.
Uh-huh.
I'm naturally Team Gwen.
Yeah.
Because of how much I love Ultimate Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
No knock on MJ, because I love what MJ and Peter have, but I completely was sold into Ultimate Spider-Man. And at that time, when I first read it, I didn't understand multiverses and stuff like that and Ultimate. You know, so I was like, oh, my God, this is amazing.
Yeah.
And I was destroyed when I saw, you know, how she died. So, yeah.
But the whole story with this is I do love their chemistry. I love that character. The only thing that I didn't like is, once again, with the narration, we are supposed to somewhat assume that it might be Clark. And even Clark calls his friends weirdos. And I understand that we can all be jokey with friends and be like, oh, you're such a weirdo. But to say, like, as the group, oh, these are the weirdos, and I'm that, I didn't like that a whole lot. Which is, to get away with that, I'm thinking, okay, this is an omnipresent, just random person and not Clark. You know, you made the comment about the whole possible rape scene with Lana. We did see the beating up of the one friend, and they said it was because of, and just to, you know, I'm going to say it straight just because this is a Black Label book, but they do call that person a spick. Very, very, very harsh word.
Towards Latins, yes.
And I was surprised by that. But then I remembered it was a Black Label, and I was impressed that, you know, the impact of it actually hit. And like you said, the way that he was wanting to do something about it, the way he actually did do something, he did something without doing something. He defended himself. He confronted them and waited until they attacked, and then he defended himself, which is a very Clark thing to do. I told you guys in Slack that it was a very Jonathan Kent thing to do, Pa Kent, for when, you know, they had the family conversation about it, and then Pa went you know, on his own to talk to Clark and say, hey, what you did in some minds could be very bad, but just want you to know that you can do this and I'm proud of you, and always stick up for yourself and your friends.
Yeah.
That is something that Paul Kent always does. I do appreciate that Miller did put that voice into Paul. But yeah, you know, something, it wasn't a horrible book, but it was something that I did struggle to read. I'm not gonna, you know, just say that it's an awesome book because I, you know, I'm reflecting on it and, you know, saying that there are good parts. There are good and bad parts. But I am interested to see what Clark will do in the military. I think that will hold my thought process of how.
No, it was not an awesome book, but I would say that I did not have one moment where you were kind of like, man, I'm struggling through this book, and you were like on page 10. I didn't have that. But again, I don't know. Like, I guess I know what you mean. I guess with like dialogue, like nothing. I think like the Bendis shush nerd is a little more of a violation where I was like, ugh. Like, I understand what he was trying to do, and I think besides that shush nerd, he wrote a good Oliver, but it was like those, like a small little thing like that, I'm like, ooh, okay, that's cringy.
Yeah.
This here, a little thing, I see what you mean, but like things like that don't bother me to the point where it lessens a reading experience. But you know how Lana reminded me in this book? Do you read Superman Earth 1?
Yeah, I have all three.
Do you get the vibe of like Lisa LaSalle? I think she was in volume 2. The Clark's neighbor?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like she kind of, cause I was like, dude, I actually like this Lisa LaSalle. Like it was, I don't know. I bought it like immediately.
Yeah.
I bought that relationship and why they liked each other.
Well, and one of the things that I said, you know, the reason why I feel like they're going to take a little bit out of Earth 1 is the really cool thing that I always thought in Earth 1 is that Clark used his abilities and his smarts to get him by in Metropolis. He mm-hmm. he was a short-time scientist for a while. He was he played baseball for a while, which I mm-hmm. thought was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually used his powers for a little bit of gain. I feel like Miller might take that route here with the military and possibly afterward. But I will honestly be a little surprised if he doesn't go that route.
Are you expecting like some kind of Captain America shots?
I am very much expecting those just because it is Romita. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if they took a shot, you know, from an old Captain America.
Yeah, like I'm kind of wondering if they're gonna do like a nod where you're gonna see Superman with like some sort of a shield. Like, here, protect yourself, and here's, like, a shield, you know, and it might be, like, a piece of a tank or something, but it just happens to be round.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm envisioning, like, something like that happen, because, you know, they are technically, like, the two Boy Scouts of the big two.
Yeah.
So, I liked it. But, with that being said, we're gonna wrap up the show, Clay.
Yeah, it was a good show.
It was a good show. A lot of good books. Very parent, you know, like parently heavy.
Yeah.
But I liked it. It was really good. So, Clay, well, you just finished releasing on the Comic Book Legion podcast, where you can find us on iTunes, Google, wherever you could find a podcast, you could find the Comic Book Legion, and you just finished posting an episode with an interview that you did with Jason Inman.
Yes. Speaking of Captain America, yes. Yes. His book is very long titled, but he basically just calls it Super Soldiers. Talking about his experiences and how they relate into the comic book history of those in the military. He also talked about a really cool character, one that I had never heard of before, in the story Red, White, and Black, I believe it was called. The very first Captain America. I won't give the story away and the character just because you should listen to the episode. Very, very interesting on how he... that is, in fact, his favorite military representation character. So very cool to hear that. Book is on sale today. And so if you haven't pre-ordered it, I feel like you should go pick it up now. I went ahead and pre-ordered it for my brother and my dad because they were both in the military, and that will be their Father's Day. But you can find me at Fanboy Clay, or you can find Fanboy Comics Podcast on Twitter at Fanboy Comics Pod. And of course, I'm always going to be a part of the CB underscore Legion Twitter. If you ever need to get a hold of me or Mark. Mark, where can they find you?
Again, yeah, the CB underscore Legion, or you can follow me at Mark Reads Comics. And there you'll see just this beautiful avatar of myself with the backwards hat, because that's just what I do. Yeah, and you can follow me there, and we'll love to chat. I like talking comics. Mainly, lately it's been a little bit more DC heavy, but again, DC has my heart. But now with me finally getting ready to go to Alaska, going on a cruise, I'm getting like my indie on. So I've been getting a lot of indie stuff so I can read. So I'm really excited for that. But yeah, Mark Reads Comics. You can reach us at comicbooklegion@gmail.com if you're interested in being, if you just want to send us some feedback or questions or anything like that, if that's an easier way for you to contact us, you could do that as well. If you're interested in wanting to contribute, we got 3 new members of the fam, but if you're interested as well, you can go ahead and email us there or just DM us on Twitter, and we'll love to chat with you and kind of go over the next steps there. Besides that, I don't think I'm missing any. Am I missing anything?
Nope, I don't believe so.
Sweet. So then we will talk to you guys next week. Have a great new comic book day. See ya.